Hello again, and welcome back to another episode of Freaky Friday. I'm your host, Jacob Pasterfield, here at Frequency Winery in beautiful Kelowna, BC. It's been a gorgeous day in the Okanagan, and I am unbelievably excited to continue this next series in Freaky Friday through the chakras and octaves. The choctaves or the okras. If any of you folks have a propensity to spoonerism, we're going to get along very well. So I've got a lot of information to convey. I think I'm looking at a good 8 pages of notes and ideas here. So I'm going to split this little episode into 2 today. And so we're going to give you a double dose of that goodness that I'm so excited to share with you folks. So just before I kind of dig in and kind of move into the chakras and away from the mathematics of physics, there were just a couple points I wanted to clarify before moving forward. And it became very interesting as I was doing more research about chakras, because it's a very important concept and I want to make sure I'm doing it justice and expressing everything the way I can and to the best of my ability. And as I was reading, a very interesting point of information came up. And as I was talking about spectrums last week, the visible light spectrum that we participate in is the 49th octave of the electromagnetic light spectrum, which became very, very unbelievably connected. And it'll come back as I share some more information with you guys. So it's really interesting to kind of see how everything I was speaking about kind of just keeps coming back to me in all these books I'd read. So we are in the 49th octave of the electromagnetic light spectrum, which is where all of the beauty of color and sight allows our experience to be anchored within. So one of the points I didn't really dig into as much as I should have is I was talking about the concepts of overtones and undertones. So as a sound wave vibrates out, those series of peaks and valleys are what create those overtones and those undertones. And as we deal with the harmonic structure and the mathematics of vibration, the origin note or the tonic note multiplies by 1, by 2, by 3, by 4, by 5, by 6, by 7, by 8, and so on and so forth. And all of those odd harmonics and even harmonics have different qualities. So odd harmonics are usually activating, and odd harmonics are what give that kind of edge to specific sounds. Raspy blues singers will have a lot of odd harmonics within their voice, whereas even harmonics are very well-rounded and very serene and very calming. So a lot of very, very calm folk singers and those people with those, you know, pearlescent, beautiful, gorgeous voices that seem to be these blankets of vocal warmth that just envelop us, a lot of that comes from more even harmonics, or the even harmonics being those strongest peaks and valleys within any given expression. So we come into a lot of duality here, and the duality becomes very important as we continue. So we kind of look at odd versus even as activating or calming. And you can even look at it as the yin and the yang, those polarities of softness and hardness that kind of exist within any timbre. And you yourself are a collection of all of these different kinds of vibration. You're a collection of odd and even harmonic structures and vibrations within you. And you are your own beautiful prismatic and luminous sense. And your uniqueness is to be celebrated, because your individual voice and your individual body and energy structure is unique. And there isn't anyone exactly like you. And so this is where math and numerology can kind of come into play. I don't want to dig into that too much. I feel like I might overload you guys with the quantifiable parts of this whole description here. But we all operate from our own root note, or our own kind of soul note. And that's the center of who we are, the key in which all of our sonic and physical expressions emanate from. And when we interact with other people, we're going to come across people who have either similar or different forms of vibrations happening out. And when we interact with different vibrations, harmony and dissonance come into play. And so to me, that's what it means when you can kind of create resonance with other people, or even within certain kinds of music. The certain peaks and valleys, or those specific tones or timbres, can kind of almost create this very deep and profound resonance that's inexplicable in its own right. And that's how you can kind of pick up on people's vibes, and how there will be some people who immediately you guys click, you kind of resonate with. And there will be certain kinds of music that you have a natural inclination to enjoying, and some that you just cannot stand. And my opinion, or my thoughts about this, is as you and your system and each individual cell is creating all of these vibrations, they're going to follow specific kind of peaks and valleys and specific tones and specific patterns. And those patterns, if they are resonant with other patterns and the patterns of people and songs and music and colors in our lives, we're going to either create resonance or dissonance. And so that's one of the reasons why I believe you can kind of click, and you can just kind of get into those places very immediately. And I was watching a Jason Silva video about brain coupling, and it's where that entrainment in between our brainwave states becomes apparent, and that allows us to get into that intersubjective rapture, so that we can dissolve the illusion of separation. We can become that one thing. There was one comment Jason Silva made in there where he mentioned that he was really eagerly anticipating science to get to a level to be able to explain the majesty and the beauty in between these interactions, because he, quote, wanted to know what he was experiencing was real. And I feel like there's a very unintentional treasure chest of wisdom within there. I feel that very often we experience things outside of our understanding, and the cognitive dissonance we create within our inability to comprehend what's happening creates that kind of static feeling where we feel a little crazy and we're not really sure if what we're experiencing is real. And I feel like we give maybe a little less credit to ourselves than necessary, and a little bit more credit to the definitions of that experience, because we won't validate its truth or its existence unless we can quantify it with science. Even as we get into the barely visible spectrums of infrared and ultraviolet, there are still these tiny little pockets of sight and light that are just barely outside of our perception, that we still interact with on certain levels. Even if we think about scent, smell is an invisible perfume, but that vibratory quality can be reflected, and it can be calculated to be matched to the vibrations and frequencies emanated through light. So energy itself exists in many different facets, but a very interesting point and property of energy that becomes very important is the flow. The flow of energy is what becomes very, very integral to our connection and to our personal evolution. And there are many, many different cultures and belief structures that talk about this flow in different ways. The different kinds of energy, like chi, thermal energy, mental energy, physical energy, emotional, sexual energy, spiritual energy, aromatic energy. And there are all these different cultural definitions and belief structures around how that flow manifests and why its importance becomes very, very integral to our own growth. So in acupuncture, we talk about the meridians, and the meridians are the blood pathways and the chi pathways that energy flows through our body. And by interacting with and clearing these specific places with the acupuncture needles, that puncture releases that blocked system, and that meridian flow is allowed to oxidize and send blood and send energy through the rest of the systems in our body. And almost always the energy is broken down into two sections. So we always have the yin and the yang. And beyond that, different cultures have different patterns, and they have different numerological significance in behind which specific kinds of energy there are. And usually it breaks down to a 4, a 5, or a 7 structured system of how different cultures have believed this energy manifests itself. So we can look at different elements of the 4-point patterns, which would be fire, water, air, and earth, which we can translate to the north, south, east, and west, which kind of draws a cross, which is very becomes very compelling when we're speaking about any form of Christianic belief. Or a lot of different cultures speak about the 5 elements. And so the 5 elements is those original 4 plus spirit. And so spirit is the introduction of man's consciousness, man or woman's consciousness, humankind's consciousness into those 4 elements to create the 5th. And that has a lot to do with the pentacle and it has a lot to do with the Garden of Eden symbolism, a lot more than it has to do with any, you know, witchcraft or demon raising. And it's really interesting how these symbols have been just twisted and kind of distorted through cultural transmission to be turned into all of these different things. But for each quality, there's a mirror or there's an antithesis for each of that. So from the 5 elements, we have passive, destructive, the moon, dark, or sleep. And the antithesis or the counterpoint to those would be active, creative, sun, light, and awakened state. The Chinese have 5 different elements. They have fire, earth, metal, water, and wood. And even Carl Jung speaks about these in 4 different facets of consciousness. He believes there was thought, feeling, intuition, and sensation. So these become the kind of foundations for all of the energy centers that culturally human beings have believed our human energy field interacts with the universal energy field to allow the digestion and that interaction of those specific kinds of energy to kind of express themselves. So the very first representation we have found of chakras stems from very, very old East Indian literature. It's called the Upanishads. And so the Upanishads was a oral tradition of knowledge that was carried on mouth to mouth. Well, I guess mouth to mouth sounds a little bit more like making out, mouth to ear. And then people would just describe what they believed the divine or this energy system was expressing itself through us. And it was actually carried as an oral tradition for over 1,000 years before the Upanishads was written down and became a text, or it became a body of knowledge that people could read through and reflect. Previous to that, you just had to go hang around one of these gurus who had access to this kind of knowledge through their own journeys. So it was passed around for a very long time until it became written. And as it was written, it became known as the Vedas. And the Vedas is translated into knowledge. So this was the sacred knowledge that was passed down by these very intelligent and intuitive holy men who then wanted to share that. And it became transcribed. And originally it said there was 108, but of that 108, there were 13 key texts. And so this becomes really intriguing because 13 and 108 are numbers that numerologically have a lot of significance and that keep replaying themselves as we express things in different ways. Even as we go through all of the notes in an octave, we have 12 notes, but the 13th note completes that resolution that we intrinsically and internally are craving, that kind of finality. So these 13 texts, I could go very, very in depth about these, but basically they are all about meditation on oneness, which deals with connecting to breath. And it's believed that our consciousness can carry itself through breath. Even as we breathe, I think it's something that becomes very easy to dismiss, but as we breathe this air that just miraculously exists on this planet and essentially nowhere else as far as we're aware, this breath that we have the opportunity to borrow, which sustains every moment of our being and our life, we collect a specific amount. I think it's something around 50% of each breath you take stays within your lungs, and then you exhale and you release little pieces of all of the breath that's been accumulated in there. So even if you just wake up and breathe, you are creating a symbiotic relationship to the universe around you just by drawing in and pushing out that breath. And so that duality of the in and the out kind of creates a really important movement. It kind of creates a really, really important positive and negative flow. I don't want to say positive and negative as in good and bad. We don't need to talk about dualism. Remember, when I speak about positive and negative and masculine and feminine, I'm speaking a little bit more along the lines of the points on a magnet, where we have an active and we have a passive flow. So usually most of these cultures say we have 4 to 5 energy centers. So the Tibetan warrior syllables, which I'm very fond of, have a whole different process than a lot of the Chinese and a lot of the Indian traditions of knowledge believe. Usually it's something along the lines of our navel, our heart, our throat, and our head are these centers for this consciousness to express itself. And the material forms in which it manifests can be earth, water, fire, air, and sometimes space. But the belief is that each of these elements or each of these root notes of consciousness have a particular mantra or a mystical symbol attached to it. And those mantras or those mystical symbols can refer to the cities. And so the cities are known as supernormal powers attained through the cultivation and purification of all of the energy that we as human beings get to embody and interact with. And if turning into a superhuman isn't the goal, I'm not really sure what is. Because I think we've all dreamed of having superpowers. And apparently, according to a lot of these ancient texts, that is very attainable through self-mastery. So if I, in any way, shape, or form, can become a conduit and a platform for you to become superhuman, I feel like I can rest easy knowing I have successfully accomplished something in this life. But I digress. So energy and vibration have specific harmonic resonance to them. And I keep referring to them as root notes. And I'm going to come back to this concept of root notes very often. Because these root notes become the epicenters or the gateway for all of the energy in the universe that we are interacting with to express itself in a more individualized or more specific representation. So this kind of refers to the energetic temperature or the spectrum again. Within all of these chunks of energy, there are divisible steps and representations within each of those chunks that as we go through all of those chunks, you can transpose on top of each of these different energetic spectrums. And even though the speed of vibration that these spectrums deal with, within those, there's a beginning and an end and a middle. And between all of those points, we can draw parallels so that all of these different bandwidths of energetic expression have patterns and have rules that exist within them. And so we become this epicenter. We become the prism that light comes through. We become a tiny slice of all of these octaves, which then expresses itself as a specific tiny little sliver of the cosmic tapestry of this beautiful, harmonious existence we get to participate within. So as I mentioned, the yin and the yang, or the odd and the even, and the calming and the activating dynamic that exist within all of these systems of expression, create that pull and that polarity. You know, the difference between black and right, or the left and right side of our brains. This push and this pull creates a movement, kind of pendulum-like. It's referred to as the Ida and Pingala. And if you can visualize, imagine a pendulum moving between one point and the other. So we have the beginning and we have the antithesis. We have the dark and we have the light, and we have the right side and we have the left side, and we have the masculine and the feminine. And there's this pull in between each of them. And that entanglement kind of creates a movement. And that movement plus gravity plus all of the forces of momentum behind us make a little curve in that pendulum. So even though we're looking at it as a straight line, there's a little bit of a curve behind it. And if you think about sound and vibration, we measure sound in sine waves. And so sine waves are that sexy little sideways S curve that we see all the time. And if you kind of look at that, if you take an S and you put it on its side and you just kind of look at it, it's got that middle point, it's got the top point, back to the middle, to the bottom point, and then back to that middle point. So let's look at that expression, that sexy little S curve, and let's mirror it. Let's give it its antithesis. And if you were to mirror that S curve and flip it on top of itself, it makes a sideways 8, or the infinity sign. And so within that expression, this oneness of this pendulum and its position becomes a kind of two-ness. And that two-ness kind of becomes love, or an expression of creation. And that's where the beauty of all of this mathematics come back in, that 1 becomes 2, becomes 4, becomes 8, becomes 16, 32, 64, 128, so on and so forth. Or we can even follow the Fibonacci sequence, where 0 and 1 become 1, and 1 and 1 become 2, and 2 and 1 become 3, 3 and 2, 5, 5 and 3 become 8, and 8 and 5 become 13, 13 and 8 become 22. So there are all these systems of the expression of these, this energetic pull, this cosmic moment between the sides of the polarity and the space in between that creates all of the dynamic of expression. So there have been a lot of different names for this energy: prana, chi, spirit, life force. Energy is even another term that's a little bit less dogmatic that a lot of people become very comfortable associating with it. But the movement of the Ida and the Pingala between the Shushumna Nadi, which are all of these different, it's like the neutral, the active, and the passive energy centers within our system, kind of become the expression of everything. They become the rainbows and the dreams and the space in between. And that's kind of why I have named all of my classes and this whole, you know, long form discussion into what I teach as that. And so for me, our human existence is kind of the every single point in between rainbows, which is the expression of light and sound and color, and dreams, which is our consciousness expressing itself through our psyche. And so between our interpretation of the experiences around us and every single point of understanding in between that become the every expression of the polarities. And so that's our rainbows, dreams, and space in between. So it's been really interesting because there have been a lot of very wonderful and intelligent people who have looked at all of this information and kind of related it as a metaphor, not even a metaphor, some even believe as a physical representation for elevating consciousness. So there's this big belief, and the term considered is it's about rising the kundalini. So the kundalini is a metaphorical serpent that is coiled around the base of our spine at our root chakra, which thrives to zig and zag its way up the middle pillar of our spine to reach Lord Shiva at the top of our crown to hit that full enlightenment. And once that full enlightenment is hit, it snakes its way and zig and zags all the way back down to the root to complete its journey. And if we look at that from a geometric standpoint, it kind of creates that little helical structure, that little zig and that zag and that infinity sign placed upon itself, growing and growing into different dimensions of existence, becomes very profound. It becomes the pathways. And so it's really interesting that even pre-Christianity, the symbol of the serpent was something that has been very ingrained and very interesting. And so it's really funny to find all of these different parallels. So as I work here at Frequency Winery, one of the things we do is we use sound waves to clarify our wine. And the way that it works is we use specific harmonic frequencies. And these frequencies just so beautifully and miraculously follow the laws of physics and the mathematics so well that as these sound waves vibrate out, they collide against each other in very specific ways. And these collisions create what's known as phase cancellation. And what that means is I have a sound wave going up and then an equal sound wave going down at the exact same time. So like plus one and negative one, they cancel each other out. And it's very rare for these mathematics of vibration to create phase cancellation in such beautiful and consistent ways. But these specific notes or these specific frequencies do them identically every single time. And I don't have it up soon, but I have a video where I can show you by putting sand on top of a metal plate sitting on top of a speaker, the sound waves will move that sound into these wonderfully beautiful geometric patterns that just exist as a facet of vibration expressing itself. And so as these peaks and valleys of these vibrations line up, they cancel out and they create the space for these beautiful patterns to create. One of the things that becomes very interesting is as the kundalini or the energy through our system ebbs and flows up of our middle pillar, the places where they intersect create these focal points, these little points of silence or activity where the energy can kind of express itself even more. And one of the things that's really interesting is physiologically on our body, the places where a lot of these mystics and psychics have said that these energy centers line up or the chakras are present, we can look into the physiology of our body and we can find that there are endocrine glands, major organs, or spinal ganglia created and focused on these specific points, as if that specific location in relationship to our body has some form of significance. So, some of the ways in which chakras have shown up in Western, Western philosophy, but I want to say in the Western consciousness, stemmed from a few psychologists and very smart men. So Sir John Woodruff was one of the very first, and he was infatuated, and he just had a very deep, profound love for yoga and tantra and a whole bunch of Eastern philosophies, and he became so in love with all of this that he helped translate many, many of these Sanskrit texts that spoke about the power of the kundalini and the energy currents as they flow through our body. And he started writing a lot. He wrote books about serpent power. And another very powerful and influential man who I'm sure most of us know about is Carl Jung. He's one of my favorite human beings. He's kind of my spirit animal. I read his books voraciously, and he felt that Kundalini was a model for the development of higher consciousness through the alchemical process. And he was fascinated by mantras and mandalas and using them as a means of accessing the unconscious to attain self-realization. So pretty cool to see some of your heroes interested in some of the very similar things you inherently are interested in as well. So the Western understanding of chakras owes a very large debt to the theosophists. So if you don't know what theosophy is, I would absolutely recommend you dig right on into that rabbit hole and come out the other end with all sorts of insight. But it was spearheaded by an amazing woman, Madame Blavatsky. And again, her on her own is an amazing human being. She was this badass, wild, witchy, feminist, punk rock woman. She started a school of mystical thought in 1875. So chronologically, that was not a very open time for women to develop their own schools of thought. And Madame Blavatsky, I'm sorry for the pronunciation of many of the words in this podcast. I'm sure I am just botching them. But she just created such a wide body of work that was so outside of what most people were accustomed to. She kind of altered the ways in which we ascertain and search for knowledge. She was so badass that she influenced this guy, Charles Webster Leadbeater, who at the time was an Anglican priest. He joined the Theosophical Society in 1883, and after less than a year, he renounced the church and he followed her to India, and they both stayed there for 5 years, learning more and more about the Vedas and about Eastern philosophy. So Charles Leadbeater wrote about the chakras in his book, Inner Life and the Chakras, and he was one of the first people in the West to propose the idea that everyone can learn to see the chakras as spinning discs or wheels by cultivating and enhancing their psychic vision. He considered these chakras as energy vortices, and this helped develop the idea that the subtle energies of many kinds are centered in and moved through our chakras. He considered the chakras as energy transformers that linked the various subtle layers of the aura, or the human energy field, to the universal energy field with which we are always participating in. So there are these many different layers of subtle energy that pass through us. Consider they're sometimes called etheric, mental, emotional, physical, cathartic, astral, all sorts of different names for these things. But they are different chunks of different kinds of energy spectrums expressing themselves through the octaves. And each of these octaves have the root notes, or these focal points, these focal colors, these focal notes within the spectrum. So another thing that becomes really interesting is these chakras have very consistently been attached to the endocrine glands. And each of the different chakras has a correlated gland associated with them. There's a little bit of a differing of opinions into which chakra and which endocrine gland is related, but across the board, everyone seems to feel the same way, that these endocrine glands are very related to the chakra systems. Another thing that I learned that I found very profound and very interesting is the endocrine glands, within our body, they release and receive specific hormones that regulate our emotions, our drives, our mindset, our mental well-being. All of these different parts of ourselves get kind of their fuel through the endocrine glands. And the endocrine glands are some of the most responsive parts of the human body to sound and vibration, and even up into color. So all of these different glands that actually regulate a lot of the different movement within our energy system and within our bodies respond to sound so beautifully and so unbelievably profoundly. It becomes really interesting to me to kind of map out the body and the physiological structure and how, where all of people who, I'm air quoting, you can't see it, consider themselves psychic, were to see these specific chakras, we can then go in and do x-rays and nanorays of the body and find that all of these places have significance and everything is just so beautifully connected to each other. So even though it's not as quantifiable when we're talking about energy and we're talking about energy systems and how your spirit or your soul expresses itself through your body, it becomes really interesting that all of these different schools of thoughts created non-locally on different parts of the globe have a whole lot of similarities underneath them. And even when we get into all sorts of stories and mythos, we find a lot of these different patterns and these different structures kind of returning and coming back in different expressions of these different ways. I was watching Infinity Wars a little while ago, and I thought it was really interesting how Thanos was developing this infinity gauntlet that could harbor all of the energy of these infinity stones, which at the beginning of creation were the six representations of all energy and all life and all matter. So it didn't turn into a perfect metaphor because there's six, and six is kind of a little different. He's got a, I was hoping there would be five, and I'd be like, oh, that relates to the Tibetan warrior syllables, and it's so cool that
Stan Lee and all the beautiful folks at Marvel have been creating all of these mythological structures that relate into spiritual consciousness and the development and progression of human evolution. But it wasn't really that much. So, he had the Mind Stone, Reality Stone, Time Stone, Soul Stone, Purple, Blue, Red, Orange, Yellow. They follow these specific castes, but Marvel didn't actually have a very poignant representation of what I was anticipating everything to be. But here I am rambling about comic books, so I feel like that's a pretty good place to take a break for right now. So I'm going to take a break. I'm going to drink some water. I might make some noises. Might make some colors. I would advise you to do the same. And I will start this next episode here in a few moments, but if you don't get to it today, I hope you have an amazing day, an amazing life, an amazing year. I hope you have all sorts of wonderful festivities through the Yuletide, however you may celebrate this seasonal change. And I just want you guys to remember your beautiful prismatic self as a unique expression of reality in a lens and facet that only you can express and understand within. So I'll be back in a moment, but if you're not back in a moment, catch you next time. Lots of love. Take care.